The second scene has to do with, it's much later on in the book, it's about halfway through. It has to do with Mr. Flood's first exacerbation. And for those of you who never groveled around the courses of a pre-medical major, that simply means the heightening of the disease itself. These kinds of things, the way I understand them, the diseases go in remissions and in exacerbations, and exacerbations are when you feel the direct effects of the disease. And it has to do also, as you'll find out, with Mr. Flood's weight loss, which goes along with this particular exacerbation. And I think you'll also see how the relationship between the two men has begun to deepen according to their situation and to their needs. The bulk of this scene, and it's a fairly long, it's the longest one I'm going to do, has to do with the arrival in the hospital room of a television set that has been sent to Mr. Flood by his son, who is named Gale. And there is one other character in the next scene, and it's a nurse by the name of Miss Scarley, and she is really the only visible, at least as far as the book is concerned, visible humanitarian on the hospital staff. Mr. Flood's exacerbation continued relentlessly. He fought the pain and slamming sensations that went through him for just under a day. Then he gave up and let the thing run its course. In periods of semi-consciousness, he called and called for water, but no one gave him any. Occasionally, Mr. Miller would tell him that he couldn't have any. But Mr. Flood did not hear him. The IVs they ran did not stay even with Mr. Flood's loss of fluids, and he had periods where he felt he was shrinking. When he came out of the exacerbation after almost 3 days, he had lost 17 pounds. He gained back 4 of them within 2 days, but the other 13 pounds were gone for good. When he was able to get up 2 days later, he asked Mr. Miller if he had ever lost that kind of weight. No, Mr. Miller told him, without looking up from his book. What's it mean? Mr. Flood asked. It just gets you down to fighting weight, Mr. Miller said. How come I get it and you don't? Mr. Flood asked. Don't you know anything about cancer? Mr. Miller asked. If you got it, you know enough, Mr. Flood said. Cute, Mr. Miller answered, just like a tough leading man. I guess you got everything there is to know about it somewhere in your head, Mr. Flood said. As a matter of fact, Mr. Miller said. What I'd like to know is why you know about it, Mr. Flood said. Knowledge, Mr. Miller answered. What good is it, Mr. Flood said. It makes one understand, Mr. Miller said. Knowing things is all right, Mr. Flood said, but when I know something and I can't use it, I forget it. It don't mean a thing. Did you know that cancer is as old as life itself? Mr. Miller said. When they told me I had the crab, that's where the disease originates, its name from, I read very nearly 20 books within a week. The Greek in the original, the Egyptian and Sanskrit in translation, of course. Fascinating. Fossil remnants of bones millions of years old reveal the honeycombing of carcinoma. Writings 2,000 years before Christ make note of ulcers, mysterious swellings, tumors. Carcinos, he went on, loving the sound of his voice. What's that mean? Mr. Flood asked from the edge of his bed. Crab, Mr. Miller said. The Greek word for crab, carcinos, hence carcinoma. Crab because of the tentacle-like way the disease radiates throughout the body. Did you know that Galen, the great Roman physician, identified the cause of cancer as melancholia? Can't say as I did, Mr. Vlund said. Rather putting the cart before the horse, Mr. Miller said, chuckling to himself. You really think that stuff's important? Mr. Flood asked. It wasn't until the Renaissance that cancer got its first serious scrutiny, Mr. Miller said. He raised the book slightly to indicate his source. Mr. Flood looked hard across the room at Mr. Miller, and then he said, "So what?" Mr. Miller closed his book, and after a moment he said, "Good point." The stench in the room the next morning was unmistakable. It was noticed first by Mr. Flood, who said across the room, "What in hell is that?" The orderly noticed it, but said nothing when he brought the breakfast trays. But very soon Miss Scarley came in and went directly to Mr. Miller. "I have a day off and they don't even change your dressing," she said to him. "Neglect is one of my minor difficulties," he answered, and then lay back passively in the bed. Miss Scarley went to work quickly on him. His wound was noticeably larger, puckering up like a little volcano, and fluid ran freely from it for a few seconds after Miss Scarley took off the last layer of gauze. She cleaned the wound carefully, and when she asked Mr. Miller if he had pain, he told her he did not. Mr. Flood drank his juice, but with the odor in the room as strong as it was, he quickly set the metal cover back over his plate of whitish scrambled eggs. As Miss Scarley finished her dressing on Mr. Miller, the orderly came in with an aerosol can of air freshener and set it down on Mr. Miller's night table. Then Miss Scarley stood straight again beside the bed and pulled the sheet to Mr. Miller's chin. She picked the can from the table and shook it vigorously. Then she blessed the air over Mr. Miller's bed and set the can down again and left the room. Mr. Flood moved off his bed with a quick motion and went straight for the can. He took it and began to spray the entire room. White, misty clouds began to squirm out of the can and hang in the air. He sprayed and sprayed. "What are you doing?" Mr. Miller asked. "Cleaning out the place," Mr. Flood answered. His arm completed a long arc. "Will you please stop it?" "I can still smell it," Mr. Flood said. "Then spray some up your nose," Mr. Miller said. Mr. Flood spun around, the can still emptying itself, and said, "I don't stink." "God has been good to you," Mr. Miller answered. He coughed as a billow of the heavily perfumed mist surrounded his chest and head. Mr. Flood stopped spraying then and tested the air with his nose. Then he noticed that the can was nearly empty, and he put the cap back on it and set it down on the night table. "Are you satisfied that the room has been purged of all offensive vapors?" Mr. Miller said. "That's a god-awful smell you've got there," Mr. Flood said. "I am closer to it than you are," Mr. Miller said quietly. "Why did all of a sudden get like that?" Mr. Flood asked. "Because they did not change the dressing," Mr. Miller answered. "If that was me," Mr. Flood said, "I'd sure as hell let them know a thing or two." "It would do no good," Mr. Miller said. Mr. Flood thought for a moment and then said, "Why don't people come in here more? I see so many people going up and down the hall." "It allows us more time for self-pity," Mr. Miller said. "Nobody ever really comes in here," Mr. Flood said, as if discovering the truth. Both men slept well for most of that afternoon, And when Mr. Miller awakened along toward 5, he sat up in his bed and stared in horror at a 27-inch color television set that sat between the beds. There was a bright red ribbon around it with an envelope attached at the bow. "Flood," he shouted, "wake up and tell me who in the name of God has given birth to that." Mr. Flood slowly came alive, and he looked with wonder at the television. "Jesus damn," he said, and he smiled affectionately at the set. "Well," Mr. Miller said.
"Beats me," Mr. Flood answered.
"Get the goddamn thing out of here," Mr. Miller said. He pointed to it as if it were a deadly animal. Mr. Flood eased himself out of bed and went to the set. He rubbed his hands over the top of it, and then he fondled the knobs as if he were a child with a Christmas toy. "Jesus, that's nice," he said to himself. "Flood, what the hell are you doing?" Mr. Miller said. "Out of this room with that." Mr. Flood took no notice. He pulled the envelope from the ribbon, and when he saw his name on it, he turned it over and opened it. A card inside read, "With all my love, Daddy, Gale." And underneath it, his son had carefully printed, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light." Mr. Flood read the card several times, and his bewilderment was visible on his face. "Well," Mr. Miller said again. "Shut up," Mr. Flood said quietly, and he put the card to his chest with great affection. "Who in hell has perpetrated this on me?" Mr. Miller said. "It's from my son, from his shop," the card says.
"His shop?" Mr. Miller said.
"Gale's Gale."
"Whatever is a Gale's Gale?" Mr. Miller said.
"His boutique, or whatever you call it," Mr. Flood said. He looked down again at the card like a poker player.
"Dandy," Mr. Miller said.
"Now when is this monstrosity going to leave?" "You are a sad son of a bitch," Mr. Flood said vehemently. "It's just because you ain't got nobody that you don't want me to have my family." "Well, Mr. Professor Big Shot, it stays. And if you don't like it, you can lump it."
"I shall kick its face in," Mr. Miller said.
"You do, and I shall kick in yours right after it," Mr. Flood said. Mr. Miller's little body was afire. Reason had suddenly deserted him, and he was helpless without it. He yanked his buzzer from the night table and started squeezing it as if he might make some final statement with it. When Miss Scarley came into the room, Mr. Miller was still holding the buzzer, and Mr. Flood was unwrapping the ribbon around the television.
"What have we here?" she said to Mr. Flood.
"Scarley, you're a reasonable woman," Mr. Miller said.
"Sometimes," she said. And then she looked back to the television.
"Your son didn't want to wake you," she said to Mr. Flood.
"He was here? He brought it himself?"
"He came with the two men who brought it," she said.
"Reason, Scarley, I beg of you," Mr. Miller put in.
She turned slowly toward Mr. Miller as she said, "What's the trouble, Homer?"
"You know perfectly well," he said.
"I can understand your objections to the last black and white," she said.
"But this is color."
She spread her arms in emphasis.
"What little respect I had for you as a human being has abated," he said. "You want the rule sheets brought out again?"
"I know what the rules say," Mr. Miller answered. "They say he can have his sleek, full-color fruit carton, if he pleases to. And, furthermore, the rules say that if the other patient in the room doesn't care for fruit cartons, it is simply his eternal bad luck."
"You two can work it out," she said. And as she started to leave the room, she looked again at the set.
"It's all right, isn't it?" Mr. Flood asked. play it day and night if you want, she answered. I'll get you for that, Scarley, Mr. Miller said. When are you going to join the 20th century, she said to him.
Never, he answered.
There was a long moment of silence in the room after Miss Scarley left. Mr. Miller toyed with his buzzer, and Mr. Flood began to unwrap the cord from the back of the television. He held it in his hands for a few seconds while his eyes moved about the walls of the room in search of a socket. His gaze settled on the outlet just above Mr. Miller's head, and he started for it.
You wouldn't dare, Mr. Miller said to him.
No, Mr. Flood said.
Take one more step and I'll let you have it, Mr. Miller said.
He slapped the buzzer into his palm as though it were a blackjack. There's an outlet just behind the head of your bed, he said. You had better use that. Then he very deliberately pressed the buzzer and reached into the cabinet of the night table and took out the whiskey bottle.
Going to get drunk? Mr. Flood asked.
Utterly, Mr. Miller said.
Mr. Flood began to pull the rabbit ears up from the back of the set, and as he did so, he said, What you got against TV anyway? TV helps to pass the time.
That's the first thing I've got against it, Mr. Miller answered. The orderly brought in a fresh pitcher of ice water and set it on Mr. Miller's night table. As he was leaving the room, he paused for an instant to watch the television blossom into a painfully green existence. Then he was gone, and Mr. Flood turned to Mr. Miller and said, How do you get the green out? He stooped a little to look at the array of knobs on the right side of the set.
Green people are rather refreshing, Mr. Miller said.
He poured the ice water into the whiskey and drank two large gulps. Mr. Flood began to turn the knobs in a random, awkward way, and the picture whirled down the color spectrum and back with great speed.
Is there a dial that says tint? Mr. Miller asked. Here it is, Mr. Flood said after a moment.
He began to turn it as if he were rapidly winding a watch, and the picture went so green that only the vague outlines of the faces were distinguishable.
The other way, boob, Mr. Miller said. Who you calling? Mr. Flood began.
But then the picture began to adjust itself under the ramblings of his fingers, and he forgot what he was going to say.
Is it possible that we might watch a news broadcast? Mr. Miller asked. I want to see what else is on, Mr. Flood said.
He twirled the channel selector so fast that all of the stations seemed to blur into one. Mr. Miller rolled his eyes to the ceiling and then took another large mouthful of whiskey. The television sat between the beds all that evening, as if it were a short, square person for whom Mr. Flood had great affection. Mr. Miller tried to read, but it was impossible. He drank in an effort to block the meaningless gurgles and burps that spilled from the set onto the floor of the room. When he could stand it no longer, he asked Mr. Flood to turn the set down to minimum volume. Mr. Flood turned the set only a little bit lower and moved forward. Then, after a while, Mr. Miller would ask again, and Mr. Flood would comply. By 10:30 that evening, Mr. Flood was no more than 2 feet from the set, and Mr. Miller was good and filled up with whiskey. But he knew it, and he was not surprised to hear his own voice slur occasionally, or to feel his hand slip a little on the sides of the glass when he went to pick it from the night table. He knew that he was very close to being very drunk, but he did not care about it. There was the feeling in him of deep depression, as if the organs of his body had suddenly gone to rocks, and he felt an isolation from his surroundings, a distance from Mr. Flood and the rest of his small world. He picked the glass from the table and set it on his chest, within tipping distance of his lips, and he stared alternately at Mr. Flood and the television set. He watched Mr. Flood giggle occasionally at the program he was watching. And when he did, Mr. Miller's head went slowly back and forth in awe and bewilderment. Finally, without thinking about it, he said, "When are you going to turn that thing off?" Mr. Flood answered with a short wave of his hand, as if he were batting away a fly. "When?" Mr. Flood said. He waited for an answer, but none came. Mr. Flood simply reached out and adjusted the volume upwards. Again, Mr. Miller asked him, and this time Mr. Flood said, "You drink too much." Mr. Flood giggled at the program and said, "Did you see that? Jesus, damn, that was funny." "It was not funny," Mr. Miller said. A comic magician had appeared to swallow two ping-pong balls. "It was to me," Mr. Flood said. He did not move his eyes from the set. "How in the name of God can you look at that thing for hours upon end?" "I like it," Mr. Flood said. "Can't you read a book or talk or something?" Mr. Miller asked. "I never liked reading," Mr. Flood said to the set. Mr. Miller drank himself into a half sleep within the next hour, and Mr. Flood moved back in his bed to watch the late movies. He was soon sound asleep, and the television continued to throw its rainbow in eerie fashion about the walls of the room. All the while, Mr. Miller kept his glass balanced on his chest and watched the television through half-opened eyelids. When he heard Mr. Flood begin to snore in what sounded a most profound and satisfied way, he got out of bed and went to the television. He was about to turn it off when he saw the card lying on top of the set. He picked it up and read what Mr. Flood's son had written. "Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light." The hand that held the card dropped to his side, and he turned to look at Mr. Flood's sleeping form. "Oh, no, Flood," he said very softly. "This hasn't got it at all." He shook his head slowly and said, "It isn't even close." He put the card back on top of the television and turned it off. The next morning, when Mr. Flood put the television on at 6:15, the picture filled only half the screen. In 10 minutes, it had shrunk to the size of a postcard. And in another 10 minutes, there was a dry, crackling sound, and the picture tube blew. That's the longest selection I want to read, and it's the last from Going Gentle.